It could be interesting. Just do a lot of hums and haws.
Hmm.
Haw. Huh. That's very interesting.
You don't say.
You don't say.
Can I say search me?
You're listening to TV Tangents, a retro TV podcast. Welcome back to the show. Today's episode is a history lesson about TV history. We're talking about the history of television from the 1920s
what?
Through the 1950s.
Oh my goodness.
I know. You're like, how is that even possible?
It doesn't seem like TV started in the 20s.
Actually, the invention of motion pictures, as we know, goes back to the 1880s.
Motion pictures as in movie?
As in moving pictures. You know, like, you know, those hand cranky reels and things like that. They were really started, you know, in the 1880s. And
oh, wow.
I think we can't talk too much about TV until we understand where TV came from.
Totally.
And what the history of it was, because it makes, it puts things in perspective when you're watching old shows.
Sure.
And you can understand why they are so different than what we're watching today. Surprisingly, the first scheduled TV service in the U.S. began in July of 1928. Hmm. It was broadcast from an experimental station in Wheaton, Maryland, which is a suburb of Washington, D.C. And a month later, a New York City radio station alternated between radio broadcasts and live silent images.
Huh.
So they were really just experimenting and just kind of shooting out blobs, basically, and pictures.
Random that pictures were moving. Of people moving.
And I also read that some of the earliest television transmissions were actually done on gramophone records, which I do not understand because I don't get science.
Yeah,
you can transmit something that way. But they were on 78 RPM gramophone records. So all of these broadcasts were experimental. These first ones were experimental and not intended for the public. They were just practicing to see what they could do.
But public people in the public accessed this stuff? Like they, if it came across?
Later on.
Okay.
But in this way, it was more of like people tinkering with things and shooting them back and forth to each other to see what they could do.
Interesting.
The first television drama was The Queen's Messenger, which was a one-act play and broadcast out of Schenectady, New York, on September 11th, 1928.
Huh.
So at this time, home TV sets weren't a thing. Correct. People didn't have sets, so they could receive these pictures. They really only saw the programs by demonstrations. And they were on little, like, 6-inch screens. So they were really just a novelty that people were trying.
Hmm.
NBC began regularly scheduled programming on April 30th, 1939, with a broadcast of the opening of the 1939 New York World's Fair.
Hmm.
So the point of TV in the beginning was not really to entertain us. But
almost
to,
just news.
Yeah, like news and things like that. And it was, people still preferred radio.
Sure.
Because that's what they had. And
yeah.
I can imagine it in the 20s, you wouldn't have a general need for TV.
Right. Why would you be watching what other people were doing?
Yeah.
That would like, be a new concept to people.
Probably not something you would consider. I want a movie theater in my house.
Yeah.
But.
And why, you know, and if it was such a new thing, why would you, think to watching other people living their life, if that's especially what it was, and it wasn't acting.
And yeah, it was like...
Know, and then here we are in 2018 where we watch reality shows.
We have to watch everything. Well, a lot of that early TV was just like, really just like faces moving and animals jumping. And just they would record something.
Yeah.
They would film something so that they could try it. Because... even when movies were around, that was film. But TV in the beginning was not on film.
Yeah.
It was live. By the end of 1939, NBC had 20 to 58 hours of programming per month.
Oh.
So it was sporadic. Mm-hmm. And it was sent out from a transmitter at the top of the Empire State Building. It was mostly news, drama, and educational programming. And their estimated audience at the time was between 5 and 8,000 viewers.
So I find what you just said is so interesting when you said it was transmitted from something on top of the Empire State mm-hmm. Building. Because if I'm thinking correctly to the movie King Kong.
Yeah.
Where there's like the little bolts of things yes. at the top of the Empire State Building.
Exactly.
How cool is that?
Exactly. That's like TV transmissions.
Interesting.
So of their 5 to 8,000 viewers, those people had to be within 40 to 50 mile radius of the Empire State Building.
Oh, man.
To get any kind of transmission.
Sure.
So it wasn't like the whole country's tuning in to see the World's Fair or anything mm-hmm. like that. The first official TV advertisement was for Bulova watches on July 1st, 1941, during a baseball game between the Dodgers and the Phillies.
Huh.
But during World War II, many stations suspended broadcasting.
Mm.
Those that stayed on the air provided entertainment like sports and plays, but also war news and training for first aid providers. Because I think maybe there wasn't so much demand for entertainment, and there was a lot mm-hmm. more going on that they needed to focus on.
Yeah.
It was really more of a newspaper-type medium, like, to get the word out.
Sure. And I think that entertainment-wise, it was probably a distraction from the war that was mm-hmm. kind of, you know, not to talk about sports or anything, but they did start a women's baseball league mm-hmm. during the war mm-hmm. Because the men were fighting. And so that was kind of an entertainment for fans. So that's interesting that mm-hmm. they would have stuff like that going on and people might want that for a distraction.
Well, production of TV sets, radios, and other equipment for civilians was actually suspended from April 1942 to August 1945 mm-hmm. Because, you know, they needed all the materials they could get and all the resources they could get for the war effort. Mm-hmm. So at this time, there were about 5,000 TV sets in operation.
Wow.
And can you imagine not being able to go out for 3 years and buy a TV or a radio?
Oh, my goodness.
Like, they couldn't produce them. So maybe they're sitting there in shops and maybe they're there, but yeah. like...
Or did they dismantle some and use the maybe. Parts for stuff
I mean,
for
at that, the war? You know, during the war, people were turning in their medals
mm-hmm.
for the war effort. So that yeah. is a possibility.
Interesting.
After the war, television sets were in high demand because people had seen what they could do
mm-hmm.
and they had, you know, been without them for 3 years and now they wanted them. The number in the U.S. was around 44,000 by 1947, with most of those being in the New York area. Again, mm-hmm. because they had to be close to mm-hmm. the transmitter to actually be able to get that.
And that was still the only place that was transmitting?
There were little stations that were starting to pop up around the country,
mm.
But still not a lot because it wasn't like a radio station.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't just talk into a microphone like we are now. You yeah. had to have a picture, and it had to be done live because it was expensive to, you know, film something.
Yeah.
That's, you know, obviously they're still making movies at this time.
Yeah.
You can go to a movie theater. You can get your news from the theater. You can get your news on the radio.
Yeah.
So there probably wasn't that much demand for news visually, mm-hmm. I guess, on TV at your home.
Yeah.
And it was a thing people never had. Sure. So
they didn't know what they were missing. And yeah. they didn't think like, oh, we'll sit down and watch the news. Like, right. let's just turn on this box
just that's listen to the radio
corner and see who's on there.
Yeah, the radio was the more preferred form of it. Getting your news and that kind of stuff. And sports, too. You mm-hmm. would listen to sports on the radio.
Yeah. That was kind of a major thing for early on sports, being the sports connoisseur that I am. When they talk about the history,
mm-hmm.
there's some things that there's no, you know, now there's like, oh, there's video evidence of right. that. No, there's not. It was all mm-hmm. on the radio. And that's mm-hmm. really all they have for a lot of things.
And this early TV wasn't filmed. So even if it was shown,
mm-hmm.
it's not like there's a copy of it.
Yeah.
After the war, the FCC was flooded with applications for TV station licenses mm. because people now wanted that. And yeah. they had to have a local station in order to see anything. Until the late 40s, television programming was still sporadic and the audience was limited. Again, TV sets cost about $400 in the 40s, which in 1940s money is a lot of money. Yeah. They were demonstrated in appliance stores and also in bars. So people could see them there and then decide that they want to have one at their own home.
Interesting.
So in order to lure people into buying them, the networks would broadcast sports on the weekends.
Of course.
And people would go to the bars.
Yeah.
And you see in movies and stuff, they would stand out outside the appliance stores and watch things on TV.
And 70 years later-ish, we still do that. Still go to the bar to watch games on TV over the weekend.
Some of us.
Yes.
I tend to go to the bars that don't have the TVs with the sports on them just to get away from the sound.
No.
I just have to, a tangent here, let you know I'm very sorry. I know this is going to damage your image of me, but my least favorite sound, one of my least favorite sounds in the world, is football on the radio.
Football on the radio. Oh,
I can't stand it. Okay, where was I? What did I just say?
Well, you went on your tangent about sports not being good, but then we were talking sports about... sucking.
So by the fall of 1948, TVs were becoming more popular and programming became more regular. The Texaco Star Theater, starring Milton Berle, was the first hit TV show. And it's credited with the quick growth of television sets in American homes between 1948 and 1953, which is why Milton Berle was nicknamed Mr. Television.
Oh.
I'd heard that before. Never knew why.
That.
Interesting. It's the first hit show. Radio was still the more popular form of entertainment, like I said. Radio stars like Jack Benny and Bob Hope were reluctant to make the move to the newer medium because they weren't sure how it was going to turn out, this box that showed pictures in people's houses. Many of the early TV shows were based on radio programs, but some of the story types that were heard on radio couldn't be cheaply produced for TV. The networks weren't yet turning a profit from TV, so they couldn't afford the movie-type productions. Mm-hmm. So they were really just kind of low-budget plays and things like that.
Yeah.
Shows were still broadcast from cities like New York at this time, and not so much as, like, California. Like, later on, they would be filmed in California, where they had access to sets and stuff. Also, videotape wasn't available, so everything, again, was broadcast live. And the most common first programs were transmissions of musical performances and sports, sermons, and vaudeville shows. So it was really like bringing the live theater or whatever was going on into your home.
Live experiences.
Yeah.
That they were basically just being broadcast.
Exactly. So you didn't have to leave your house to see a play or to see a concert or whatever.
Interesting.
Another popular genre on live TV was the traditional stage play. Anthology dramas were weekly series that presented several plays under one title. Common plays included works of William Shakespeare, Henrik Ibsen, and George Bernard Shaw. And some original dramas were also produced for weekly anthology series like Goodyear TV Playhouse and Kraft Television Theater. Despite quality options like stage plays and variety shows, most of what was on TV was average to subpar quality. So it wasn't like you turn on your TV and, you know, there's
bad acting.
Something awesome. It was, you know, whatever people could scrape together in most cases, because the FCC wasn't regulating as much. And you could just, if you had a station, you can put stuff on TV.
Just do it.
Like any other medium. Like this one. Just go ahead and do it. So other genres began to pop up as well. Like Westerns were very popular. And game shows and crime dramas, which became really popular in the early 50s. And the sitcom, the situation comedy, a format that was actually borrowed from radio, was slow to start on American television. The most popular early sitcoms were Mama, The Life of Riley, and a show called The Goldbergs. Not the recent Goldbergs. but an older show called The Goldbergs.
Interesting.
And The Honeymooners. Everybody's heard of The Honeymooners, starring Jackie Gleason. It was first introduced in 1951 as a sketch on the variety show Cavalcade of Stars, and then became a recurring segment on the Jackie Gleason show. And then it was launched as a sitcom. Hmm. Did you ever watch The Honeymooners?
I'm pretty sure I watched some random parts of The Honeymooners, again, when I was young, and I'm sure it was on Nick at Night or whatever, was reruns.
And my dad watched it. I thought it was a strange little show.
Yeah, I think my dad did too. I think it's probably where I saw. I think
dads watched it.
Yeah, probably.
It's a dad show.
It's a dad show.
New standards were set for TV programming with the premiere of I Love Lucy in 1951. It was shot on film and was produced in Hollywood, where most of the shows were still produced in New York and were shown live. It was so popular that it was imitated by other shows, and it kind of created a new sitcom format or genre. It was the most watched series for 4 out of 6 seasons that it was on, and it never fell below third place in the ratings.
Wow.
And I would like to get to that show, too, because it's a good show and lots of people love it.
Yeah. I, again, watched bits and pieces, but I remember thinking that was probably the standard. And there's so many, I'm sure, phrases that a lot of people say might not even realize it's from that show. Yeah. But, like, I've heard stuff, I'm sure. But
and Hollywood was the movie place, and New York was the radio place. So when TV came along, it naturally started in New York, but we think of it as more of a Hollywood thing.
Yeah.
Because we think of it as, we think of TV as little movies.
Sure.
Where it actually began as radio shows.
Yeah.
And the radio shows were kind of even snobby about it. Like, oh, TV is just like another version of us with like silly pictures on it. So it wasn't always easy to just turn on the TV during the early days, obviously, because you had big gaps of time where there wasn't even anything on the TV. Even though programming was created by the networks, it had to be broadcast locally. So if you didn't have a local station, you didn't have any TV. And like we said, during the war, or right after the war, there was a big surge of stations asking for approval from the FCC. But the overlapping signals during the peak periods from all of these different stations caused interference with each other. So in September 1948, the FCC instituted a freeze on licensing new stations while they investigated the problem and created legislation and tried to figure out how they could fix it so people could actually watch the shows that were being broadcast. It was supposed to last a few months, the freeze, but it wasn't lifted until April of 1952. Wow. So the freeze for new stations. The large cities really didn't have much of a problem with this, like New York, because they already had stations.
Yeah.
A lot of cities around the U.S. only had one station. And, of course, many, many of them had none at all. So if you lived in a little town, you didn't have TV. Which, again, was not like us not having TV.
Yeah.
It was not that big a deal, but people wanted it by this point.
Yeah.
They had heard about it. When the freeze was lifted, new stations were quickly constructed in response to the desire from TV from those who hadn't yet been able to get it. During the 1953 to 54 season, the percentage of U.S. homes with TVs passed 50%. By this time, TV had become the more popular form of entertainment in America. The presidential election campaign of 1952 also pushed it to become the dominant form for politics. And the inauguration of Dwight D. Eisenhower in 1953 was the first to be transmitted live across the country. This was also the advent of campaign commercial.
Oh, good times.
And it was good because citizens who might have never had a chance to hear a candidate's platform in person had access.
True.
So where they, I mean, they could still hear things on the radio, obviously. There was radio and there was newspaper and there were newsreels. But now they were able to actually see it with their own eyes.
And I'm sure in the 50s, there wasn't all the, like, smear campaigns that there are these days.
So yeah,
I think it was probably, like, real, here's what this person thinks or stands for, the end.
Yeah, I think Eisenhower had a little bit of, like, negativity to say about his opponent, but, you know, it's probably like, meh.
Yeah, more like, well, I think this, and he's not very bright because he thinks this, as opposed to, let me tell you all the people that this I'm person sure was screwed. Like
it is now. I'm sure they didn't have these huge committees of people who were there just to make their TV and campaign.
Digging up dirt on other people.
They were probably like, hey, Jerry, could you do make a campaign for this TV here? Thanks. Richard Nixon, who was running for vice president at the time, was one of the first candidates to take full advantage of the TV. Mm. Although it would later work against him in his debate with John F. Kennedy. So TV... He was really defending himself on TV at that time, and that worked out in his favor to be able to say, hey, this is the truth. Mm-hmm. But then again, later, against John F. Kennedy, it didn't work out so well for him. We're not going to get into that because we don't talk about politics.
Yeah.
But you could Google it. By the middle of the 1950s, program production was moving from New York to Los Angeles. The programming style of live theater was being replaced by recorded film, and Hollywood studios were finally starting to take their chances on television. Mm. The movie studios didn't want to do television because it was expensive to produce, and they didn't really see a future in it. But once the TV stations started, the networks actually started to turn a profit, then Hollywood was like, hey, we have all these sets that we can use. Their movie lots were already equipped to produce the film TV shows like Westerns, which were hugely popular. Yeah. So they could use the same sets over and over again because it's a Western. Mm-hmm. You're just out in the dust and the dirt.
Yes. Looks exactly the same no matter what you're doing.
Get a horse and a couple Italian guys and let's go out.
And your hats and your chaps and you're good.
They all look like the same show to me, but exactly. I never watch Westerns, so it's fine. Walt Disney also started supplying programming in 1954, and then Warner Brothers in 1955. In 1950, the cost of a TV set was still several weeks' salary for many families. Most of the audience were city dwellers in the Northeast because they lived within range of the networks. Mm-hmm. But as they became more affordable and the number of TV stations increased, the programming produced changed to fit the expanding demographic. By the end of the decade, the number of American households with TV sets grew from 9% in the beginning to nearly 86%.
Wow.
Which I assume in this day and age is like 110%.
Exactly. I have no idea. I was going to say, every home in the U.S. now has probably 2.5 TVs per person.
We have one, two, I think we have five or six.
Mm. So close.
We have more TVs than we have
I was going to say, in my first house, I had three TVs for myself.
For yourself?
Yeah.
You were a spoiled child.
Living room, bedroom, and that to me. So that's my way of doing things. I have been in a few houses of other people's that...
I've known people in the past who didn't have TVs. I had, like in high school, I knew some twins in my class who their mom was a teacher at the school and they weren't allowed to have a TV.
Wow.
But even now, I think even if people's parents don't let them watch TV, I think everyone owns a TV.
Sure.
If you don't have a TV, well, you wouldn't be listening to our show, but let us know.
But growing up, that's true. I did have a couple of people, I think I talked about this in one of our other episodes, our neighbors. They had a TV in the basement. Mm-hmm. They didn't have one upstairs. And now I just thought about that. Another friend of mine in grade school, her house was set up the same way. They had like a living room upstairs and they had a pretty big house and no TV on that main level. But they also had TVs earlier than I did in their rooms too.
Yeah.
But their main TV was in the basement where they had like the TV room.
My family only watched TV together. Hmm. So it wouldn't make sense for us not to have one in the living room. But at one point when I was a kid, we had a small black and white TV that sat on an end table next to our couch. And that was our only TV. And then we ended up getting a bigger one when I was very young. But I remember the day we got it and it was giant.
We had the big TV in the living room. And for years, all we had was that one TV in the main room. And it wasn't until later on, I think we always had, and then I think we had one in our basement too. And then of course, later on, we got TVs for our rooms.
Well, you remember in Back to the Future when little,
when he goes back brother, to 1955?
Yeah, he goes back and the little brother is like, do you have a TV set? And he says, well, yeah, you know, we have two of them.
Oh, honey, he's teasing. Nobody has two television sets.
You have two TVs? You must be rich. So by the end of the 1950s, network executives were favoring least objectionable programming. They assumed that with only three available networks, people would watch not what they liked, but what they found least objectionable.
Mm.
So they wanted to have as little controversy or controversy, however you pronounce it, on the TV as possible to attract a wide audience.
Sure.
The end of the golden age of television, which would be 1959-ish, was marked by two events. The first was the quiz show scandal. Quiz shows were very popular, and they awarded cash prizes and had become very popular in primetime by 1955. But in 1958, people were becoming suspicious of their practices. There were rumors that many of the shows were fixed in order to add dramatic tension.
Mm. Hmm.
Sound familiar? Like maybe reality shows.
Exactly.
And people were like, maybe TV's not as honest as we thought it was.
Hmm.
On November 2nd, 1959, after being subpoenaed by a congressional committee, big winner Charles Van Doren confessed that he'd been given answers to questions before each of his many appearances on the quiz show 21.
Oh, my goodness.
It was a huge deal. America was beginning to lose faith in the sincerity of television and starting to realize that they could be duped by their TVs. Not like they can be duped now.
This is real life. This is how these people live their lives.
This is real. Oh, is it? In front of cameras. The second event signaling the end of the golden age was the debut of the series The Untouchables, which I've never seen, but I am so interested to watch it now. It's crazy.
I should watch. Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen it either.
The Untouchables, which ran from 1959 to 1963, was a show about organized crime in Chicago during Prohibition.
Mm.
It frequently featured machine gun fire and speakeasy raids.
Mm.
So, you know, it was cops busting up the alcohol sellers.
Yeah.
So obviously it was going to be violent.
Mm-hmm.
And parent groups and educators protested the depiction of violent acts on television. And they argued against TV, saying that it was a cultural toxin. As early as the late 50s, groups were saying TV is poisoning our children.
Yeah.
It's showing them violent images, which you can get violent images on the news. Mm-hmm. So
that's true.
But The Untouchables was very violent, and it wasn't the only one. You know, Westerns had a lot of shooting, but I guess not as graphic and intentional as The Untouchables. So that was the end of the golden age of television, 1959, and people were starting to not like this new medium that they had in their homes.
Very interesting that it was that new, and
and already right away, they were like, nope.
Issues.
So that answers our previous question from a previous episode of, was there TV before the 1950s?
Because we thought, no. It's very interesting that the progression to see that and then to know, you know, it's so hard. A little bit for us, I guess, we know what TV was like in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And we just talked about it, having, you know, one TV in the house and having that be the deal and knowing people where it's, the TV wasn't always on or you just didn't watch TV all the time till, you know, present day time. TVs are always on.
You cannot get away from it.
You can't get away from it. And you can see anything at any time that you want. And you not being the sports fan, but me, there is sports on so many channels and 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, recaps and highlights and everything. And then news, same thing. There's so many news channels that are 24 hours a day. But then there's all entertainment channels and everything that you can see. And now us being able to go back and watch old TV shows and craziness, to think that, like, to come from the 50s where you're right, you know, we've mentioned this in previous episodes where you didn't think you'd ever get to see that again. Like, you saw an episode and then the end, and that's going to be done forever.
Right.
And to think they could never imagine the technology and you're right, they didn't know what they were missing. So
could you imagine in 1959 thinking, I wonder if there's a way that I could save this show so that I could watch it another time.
Yeah. Yeah, other recordings. I mean, knowing that movies had started for so long. So that was stuff you could see again. Mm-hmm. It was recorded. And again, just to talk about sports, there are, you know, historical clips of games and different things. So things were recorded, but that probably started from people recording things so they could watch game film, as they call it now. Mm-hmm. Like you watch other teams to see what their tendencies are. So that's interesting that there is still so much that we never did get to see and wasn't recorded. So we will never get to see it again. And you would have never thought that back then, like, oh, hey, I'll get to see this again.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm sure we didn't think that when we were young kids either, though.
Oh,
like
no.
You watched a TV show and you were like, oh, I mean, I guess for us, knowing that, like, when we started watching reruns late at night, then that was kind of when you realized, oh, I do get to see stuff, because that's, of course, how we became fans of the Monkees, because the show came on. And it was just, you know, that's 20 years later and we're watching those episodes again, and
but
then got
still,
to see them multiple times.
But still at that time, I had to tape the show that I wanted to remember on my boombox and listen to it later, and I could picture it in my head. But I never thought, I can just push a button in the future.
Right.
And then I can watch this later.
Right. Or, you know, ask somebody that, you know, ask the recording device on my phone to just play something for me.
Yeah.
It's crazy how far technology has come. And that's not even that long a period of time. I mean, we're talking less than 70 years, basically.
It's in our parents' lifetime that TV has started and grown to what it is. Have you ever said the phrase, there's nothing to watch on TV, or I don't know what to watch tonight? Like, in the 40s and the 50s, you weren't thinking of watching TV. You watched TV. It was a box in your corner, and you watched it because you read in the newspaper that something important is going to be on.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know that this I Love Lucy is going to be on, and you watched it, and you thought it was funny, so you're going to watch it again. But it wasn't like, oh, it's 7 o'clock. It's time to sit down and just see what's on the TV and click around.
I grew up in the house where the TV was on all the time. Mm-hmm. And I probably that's just ingrained in my brain. Because when I come home, I turn my TV on and it's just, it's on. And I have whatever. And I have it on the back in the background. Like, I know a lot of people who listen to music when they're getting ready for work. I have the TV on in the other room so I can hear it just with, you know. And for me, again, going back to being the sports lover, like I just hear that in the background. So I know what happened the night before. And it's interesting, but I've done it too with other shows. Like somehow randomly I'll turn my TV on from what it was on the day before. And then there's one morning I did that and the Golden Girls was on. And I was like, oh, and I just left that on so I could listen to that. And I was like, oh, how fun.
I can't do that because I will be distracted.
You'll
by
run
it
in there and watch
I'll
it.
Stand there for like 5 minutes watching it.
I've done that a couple times with some shows. I was like, oh, wait, stop, wait, I gotta get ready.
No, I can't do it.
Yeah. It'd be fun to get a perspective from someone like our parents to be like, hey, when you were a kid, how was that? How was TV for you?
We should interview our parents.
We should.
How fun. First, we have to tell them we have a show.
Yeah. They'll be like, you do what now?
You what? Well, that's the history of the golden age of television.
That's amazing.
And now we know, and now we can put it into perspective.
Mm-hmm. And appreciate what we have all that much more now.
I don't know. I don't appreciate.
Yeah, I probably don't appreciate it as much
kind
as
of
I
like
should.
To throw it out the window.
Yeah, that too. I actually now more appreciate the fact that we're talking about all the old stuff again and going to watch that old stuff again.
The good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, we can wrap this one up.
All right. Rappy-doo.
Thanks for joining us. We'd love it if you would leave a review and also follow us on Facebook. Be sure to tune in next week for more TV tangents. I wonder what my kids are doing.
It's awfully quiet.